I'm going to talk about history and how history might be useful. That is, this is my claim. My claim is that history is useful. My claim is that if you don't know history, you become a victim, you know, of whatever anybody is telling you today or told you yesterday. Because if you don't know history, you have no way of checking up on the daily headlines or on the daily pronouncements from the White House. And so anybody in authority can tell you anything and tell you in a very authoritative voice, and they can tell it to you 12 times on 12 different television channels. And it begins to have the ring of truth. And unless you know some history, you might be inclined to just believe it because, you know, there's no way of checking up on it. So I claim that history is useful for checking up on whatever is given to you at any moment of the present time. It's not that history can definitively and finally tell you what judgment to make about what is happening today, whether it's the president's budget or the war in Iraq. History can't give you a positive, clear, final answer to these questions, because there's always a possibility that whatever patterns there have been in history, there's always a possibility of a unique event. There's always a possibility that something different has happened. And yet, history, by showing you certain persistent kind of phenomena that have occurred again and again, even if it can't give you a final definitive answer, can suggest something to you, can tell you enough to make you look further, can suggest, if not certainties, probabilities. And that's useful. So this idea of mine, or this approach of mine, of looking to history to deal with contemporary events is, I think, probably different than the usual traditional professional historian's approach. As a professional historian's approach is generally to be a little leery of dealing with immediate political issues. You know, let's be safe. You know, it's safe to deal with the past. You know, let's practice safe history. And my approach, it's not only my approach, but maybe more and more the approach of I would say, new historians, maybe historians who were affected by the movements of the 60s and who look to history to give them some guidance. But my approach and the approach of some of these newer historians, in my case, comes out of, I suppose, my own circumstances, my own life, my own experiences, in that I was not an academic all the way up to the point where I started to teach and write history. I didn't go straight through from, you know, high school to college to graduate school to teaching history and writing about history. A bunch of things happened to me in between. I had 10 years between graduating from high school and going to college under the GI Bill of Rights. And in those 10 years, I think the experiences that I had made me, when I finally went to college at the age of, you know, 27, and those experiences, I think, gave me a certain approach to education and to the study of history. And they made me want to study history in order to put it very modestly, in order to try to change the world. That's nothing more than that. No, let's not be modest. What happened in between high school and college is, well, I, at the age of 18, I went to work in a shipyard. I worked in a shipyard for 3 years. I grew up in a working-class family in New York, and my father was a waiter, a member of Waiters Union Local 2. Since I'm with trade union people, I have to bring out all of my trade union credentials, you know. Waiters Union Local 2. So I went to work in the shipyard, and because none of the kids that I grew up with went to college at the age of 18. Everybody went to work. And I went to work in the Brooklyn Navy Yard and became an apprentice ship fitter. And I joined a union. I joined a, something with this terrible acronym of UMSWA, the International Union of Marine and Shipbuilding Workers of America. I'm sure your unions have done better than that in figuring out something more pronounceable. It was a CIO union. At that time, the CIO and the AFL had not yet merged, and there was a CIO union trying to break into the unskilled ranks of the Navy Yard because the AFL had a monopoly on all the skilled workers and who were organized by crafts. You know, there were the electricians and there were the, you know, shipwrights and there were the joiners and the boiler makers. You know, all these But no, we were trying to organize the unskilled. Didn't work very well. But I had 3 years of experience organizing, actually, the younger workers in the shipyard. And then I volunteered for the Air Force. I could have stayed. It was World War II. I could have stayed in the shipyard because I had an exemption, but I was all imbued with the idea of the good fight. The good war, fighting against fascism. And so I joined the Air Force, became a bombardier in the Air Force. I flew combat missions over Europe, came back. I was married by this time. We had a kid or two. I'm very big. About how many kids we had. Yeah. And I knocked around in various jobs, went back to the shipyard for a while, knocked around the terrible jobs, you know, worked in a brewery and worked as a waiter for a while, and finally I decided I'm going to do something that I might like. You know, I went to school under the GI Bill of Rights and decided I would study history and become a teacher.